everyone, and welcome to episode 106 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Darren, a former MXM podcaster who is trying to get back on the horse again. So welcome back, Darren.
Good to be back at the start of what I'm assuming is a new week.
Yes, of course. Monday is always the beginning of a new week. So there you go. I hope you had a good weekend.
I'm almost certainly did.
All right. I'm glad. So episode 106 begins with Winters wanting an update and ends with Nixon responding to Sink. So we ended things on Friday with Jackson, unfortunately, not making it, and Martin going and giving Winters a little bit of an update as to what's going on. And it was our scene was cut in the middle, and today we continue with that scene where Winters goes, status, and then Martin goes, Private Jackson took a grenade fragment from the enemy OP. It was his own grenade. And Jones, who's standing behind him, goes, yeah, he died of his wound, sir. Now, first of all, I find it very interesting the way that Martin and Jones are delivering this information. Because Martin, in some ways, I mean, let's put it this way. Martin is a veteran here, and Jones is brand new. He just showed up. He's a fresh off the boat, fresh out of West Point officer. And he doesn't know the men. He doesn't know everything the way that things work and stuff like that. And Martin is being, I guess, somewhat subtle about what happened to Jackson. You know, he's talking about the fact, okay, he got a grenade fragment, and he says, all right, it was his own grenade, you know, and that's it. And Jones feels the need to add in that, okay, that he also died from those wounds, you know, that type of thing. And it shows a bit of Jones's inexperience by just throwing that out like that. So I find that very interesting the way it is. Now, do you know who plays Lieutenant Jones? Are you familiar with this actor?
I mean, because obviously I in my notes, there were so many people, I just put down the names of the actors I recognize. So I have Dexter Fletcher and Colin Hanks, and I'm assuming one of those.
That's right.
Is Colin Hanks the new guy?
That is correct.
Dexter Fletcher.
That's right. Colin Hanks, who yeah. We've talked about quite often over the last week and a half. It's this is Tom Hanks' son, who apparently got this job because he looks very much like the real Lieutenant Jones, as opposed to. The fact that most people
think a lot like the producer.
Right. Most people think that he got it because his father is part of the production, but apparently that is not true. And I like to believe that. You know, I like to believe that there's no nepotism here, and that that they gave it to him on his own merit. I mean, personally, and I've said this before, Colin Hanks I think is a very good actor. So I don't think he even 25 years ago, I don't think he just needed so much help from his father, because again, he just had the name. He didn't need, he didn't need his father pulling strings, because people would just, say, oh, well, his father's a great actor. So, let's give him a shot. Maybe he is too. And apparently he is.
Yeah. I find it interesting because, Colin Hanks, his debut film, obviously I've talked about Tom Hanks. And I remember seeing him in a film called Get Over It, which is like a romantic comedy with Kirsten Dunst and I'm trying to think of Martin Short is in it as well. And it's funny because I was thinking, was Orange County before or after this? And I have a feeling it's probably a little bit after his, because that was like 2000. Early 2002. This finished at the end of like 2001.
Right. Mm-hmm. They filmed this. I think they finished filming this in 2000, and then it debuted in 2001.
Yeah. So because the funny thing about Orange County is directed by Jake Kasdan, who was a nepo baby.
Right.
And it stars Colin Hanks, who is a Nepo baby. And his co-star is Shula Fisk, who is also a Nepo baby. So it's, you know, it's big on like Nepo baby. And Jack Black's in there as well.
He's not a Nepo baby.
But yeah. He's, well, I mean, his mom was quite famous, wasn't she? She did like something, like she worked for NASA and she was like a professor and everything. I don't think that probably helped him in Hollywood, you know, having someone who like worked on Jet Propulsion or something. But yeah, so I think the thing with Colin Hanks is there is always, you know, he, like, unlike other people, he, you know, he obviously has, he has a surname and he doesn't hide it. And I think if he was a terrible actor, then that probably would have done Tom Hanks's brand a bit of damage. You know, I think people write off, you know, people can excuse Chet Hayes because you've got Colin Hanks like right there. So, yeah, I think it's funny as well because Colin Hanks is like notoriously a family man. And, you know, the fact that like his brother does all the voices, you know, for like the animated, like, the kind of the TV stuff and the toys and everything, the like the voice of Woody is done by his brother Jim Hanks because he sounds exactly like Tom Hanks, and Tom Hanks hasn't got the time to be sitting around recording lines for, you know, toys that get sold. So, you know, he kind of gives the work to his brother, and I think it's funny that like you could accuse Colin Hanks of being a Nepo baby, obviously because he's got the name Hanks and casting directors are going to see that as a selling point, but I like they. Like, they haven't really worked together on much stuff. Like, there's a film which I'm almost certain, like, nobody but me and the person who guested on the episode that I covered of it, called The Great Book Howard. Like, that film has Colin Hanks and Tom Hanks playing father and son. And that's, like, one of the very few times that they've done anything together. And this is, like, one of the only other times that they've, like, you know, done stuff together. And that, you know, and obviously he like Colin Hanks did the John Candy documentary last year, and obviously Tom Hanks worked with John Candy, so you know it made sense to talk. But yeah, I like Colin Hanks has been like I've you know followed his career from basically you know just around the time that this came out, and you know I've always thought that he's a very like there's very rarely a time where you watch it and you're like, you know, you watch him doing a performance and you're like, he's only got this because of, you know, his family connections, you know. It's almost always like, yeah, he's good. And he's good in this scene. Like, you know, another one of these actors who's basically almost the exact same age. he's only a few months, like, younger than me. And yeah, like, I mean, I'm not getting that he's the new guy and Dexter Fletcher is the kind of the old guy in this particular thing, but like you say, yeah, he, you know, Dexter Fletcher is being more guarded about what happened, and then Colin Hanks is kind of giving away, and that is a nice little nod as to like their experience with this group of men, you know, at this particular time, but you know, not something that I particularly picked up on, but now you're saying it, it kind of makes sense the way that they interacted,
right? Exactly. And, you know, then Winter says, well, any others? And Martin goes, no, sir. He goes, well executed. He goes, it's not your fault. And, you know, the truck starts pulling away with the prisoners. And again, this is once again a perfect way for Winters to show how much he cares about the men of Easy Company. I mean, he's doing all he can to help them. And we're going to see even more over the course of today and tomorrow, how much he really wants to help them. You know, he is definitely a father figure to them and wants to, I would even say maybe he's a mother figure to them because he wants to keep them safe and secure and warm and, you know, all those type of things. Done really well. Yes, Damian Lewis. Yeah. Yes. But I also like the fact that he says to Martin, don't worry, it's not your fault. You know, and then he goes, talk to your men. He goes, carry on. And Martin then says, thank you, sir. And, you know, we see in the back, we hear in the background some more gunshots. I mean, they're in an active combat zone. You know, between, you know, them and the Germans across the river, there's constant shooting going back and forth and stuff like that, which we've seen, you know, we saw that on Friday. we saw that last week. We're going to see a lot of it.
Yeah, the noise, the kind of background noise, never really stops. Like, you know, people are standing around having a conversation, but that doesn't mean that people are going to stop shooting.
Exactly.
Like, you know, it's going to keep going. And yeah, that is something that kind of, obviously it was more noticeable than the last one where we had the big firefights, you know, the last 5 minutes. But in this, like, it's there in the background, like almost constantly. It's like a kind of a distant sound that no matter what you're doing, you're reminded. Like these men are having a conversation while.
And then the shot changes and we're back inside the barracks. And we see each of the men is dealing with calming down as much as they can. You see, you know, Babe lying on his bed, just staring upwards, you know, trying to relax. I guess you see Percante drinking his, I guess, coffee or soup or whatever it is. And then Webster shows up with Jones, and Malarkey looks at them and says, well, we heard you got two prisoners. Good work. And then Webster goes, well, Jackson's dead. Then Liebgott says, yeah, we heard. Yeah, well, they want another patrol tonight. And again, we hear more explosions in the background, once again reminding us of where we are and everything that's going on. And, you know, the camera does a great shot of focusing on Webster's eyes. You know, because again, the whole point of this particular part 8 is to show how the men deal with someone new coming to their, you know, joining them. And Webster was injured for 4 months and then finally came back. So it's like, how are they dealing with someone like him? You know, as opposed to also the idea of Jones, who is completely brand new that nobody knew. And then the shot changes and we see it's once again, obviously it's daylight, and we can see across the river to the house that they attacked yesterday. And, you know, we can hear someone groaning in the background or in the distance, wherever you want to look at that. And I mean, the camera actually lingers a little while showing that. And then we see Cobb, who's looking across, trying to figure out what it is. And Martin shows up behind him, along with Jones. And Martin then says, what are you doing, Cobb? And Cobb says, did you leave someone on the bank? He goes, yeah, we did. It's the third prisoner that was far too gone to bring back. And then, you know, Webster says, well, maybe we should put him out of his misery. And Cobb goes, f*** his misery. And then Martin just turns and says, I can't listen to it anymore, and just walks away. You know, but again, it shows, I guess, cruelty of war, but also the indifference of war. You know, here it is. This is our enemy. He's suffering. Let him suffer. You know, I'm not going to go risk my life to be able to go put a bullet in his head in order to stop him from making noise. I mean, again, they did think last week that he was injured far enough that he wasn't going to be able to, it wasn't worth taking him. So, you know, but the fact that, you know, now it's daytime and he's still in pain means that he's lasted a little longer than they probably thought he would have.
Yeah. And I think in like, you know, fictional, you know, war films that maybe want to show how kind of cruel the men are, they would shoot him in cold blood rather than leaving him on the bank. And I think this is showing more the reality that, like, they're kind of indifferent to it. Like, he's over there, he's paying, you know, much like their colleague was, you know, who died. But rather than, you know, following, you know, as it said in the book, you know, that Jackson saying that he wanted to die. So rather than helping the German to that end, they're just going to leave him there and they're just going to walk away from it. You know, he's no longer an important asset. They don't need him as a prisoner. So they're just going to leave. And, you know, that, like, you know, in these 5 minutes, we're getting a lot of contrast between what I think people would think war is and, you know, the reality of what war was. You know, as much as a fictionalized show can do that.
This isn't completely fictional.
Like, just leaving him there.
It's a fictionalized true story. Yeah, that type of thing.
Yeah. You know, there's a moment in Saving Private Ryan where the sniper is a really good sniper and he shoots the other sniper in, like, right in the eye. You know, that's a kind of fantastical moment, but it's also like a rousing moment, you know, for the crowd. Whereas here, you know, you would kind of maybe expect something like that. You expect one of their snipers maybe takes him out and ends the kind of noise. But instead, it's like, no, just walk away and just leave pain. Like, you know, he's the enemy. He's no use to us now. He's just a guy who's making a noise, and we don't want to be hearing that noise. So we'll just walk away and just leave him in the distance. So yeah, it's like interesting to see kind of like the, you know, the, again, like the kind of reality of war, kind of brought to the front. Like, you know, this is it. Like, some soldiers are a bit more gung-ho and they want to kind of take part in the firefight, and you know, but these soldiers, they've kind of had enough at this point. And like you say, you know, if they've been there like a year, they're probably done. You know, they've had enough of this. You know, the end of the war is coming up, and I think they all kind of feel it, and they're just like, we don't need to do
Right.
anything. You know, like, you know, towards the end, the Nazis were so incompetent, kind of falling over themselves. You didn't really need to go and kill them. You could just leave them to kind of, you know, just kind of on the side of a river, just to die by themselves. Like, no need you to kind of give them any assistance. Either way, don't take them prisoner and kind of save their life, or don't kind of execute. Like, just leave them be and just walk away.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Now, you know, when you read the book, you get a completely different impression of that, of this, of what happened here. So on page 192 of the book, right after what we read on Friday, so it says, whenever there was a lull, the men at OP2 could hear a wheezing, coughing, gurgling sound from across the river. The wounded German soldier abandoned by the patrol had been shot in the lungs. Webster and his buddies debated what to do: kill him and put him out of his misery, or let him die in peace. Webster favored killing him, because if he were left alone, the Germans would send a patrol to fetch him, and he could report on all the activity around OP1. Then they will show us even more, Webster predicted. Webster decided to haul himself across the river using the rope and knife the man. McCreery vetoed the idea. He said the Germans would use the wounded man as bait for a trap. Webster decided he was right. A hand grenade would be better. Accompanied by Private Bob Marsh, Webster moved cautiously down the river and across the riverbank. He could hear the German gasping and slobbering in ghastly wheezes. I pitied him, Webster wrote. Dying all alone in a country far from home, dying slowly without hope or love on the bank of a dirty little river, helpless. Marsh and Webster pulled the pins on their grenades and threw them beside the German. One exploded, the other was a dud. The wheezing continued. The Americans returned to their outpost, got more grenades, and tried again. The wheezing continued. They gave up. They let him die on his own time. When the shelling finally ceased just before dawn, the wheezing went out, getting on everyone's nerve. Cobb decided he could take it no more. He grabbed a grenade, went to the Bank River, heaved it over, and finally killed the German. So again, it's interesting they didn't, you know, that they decided to change this in the, you know, in the series. That, you know, that they do give us a little bit of this debate, and they also got the right people, because, you know, you do have Cobb and Webster, right, you know, having this debate as to what it is they should do. So I liked it.
Yeah, I think obviously, like, this is maybe one of those things where, like, truth is stranger than fiction. I think if that had been portrayed of them constantly missing and hitting and throwing grenades and missing, I think people would just like wonder what was happening, and it would feel like comical, because obviously, you know, as you're reading it feels a little comical, doesn't it? And I don't know that would really fit the tone of the rest of the show, of this kind of comedy of errors, of just kind of throwing grenades and never hitting him. Like, I. So it's kind of makes sense that they just left it out, because it feels like a diversion that they didn't need. Like, it's better just to have him, and like you say, part of the discussion was just to leave him to die. So I think that just makes sense for expediency, just to be like, yeah, they just left him to die
Exactly.
anyway, you know, rather than,
Right.
you know, a comedy of like constantly throwing
That's
grenades.
right. But again, I like that they at least acknowledge it. You know, that
Yeah.
this slight debate between the men. Okay, what do you do with a wounded? Because you know, anyone who's seen the, I guess, sister series of this, the Pacific, so there is a part where there's a Japanese soldier who's wounded, and you know, the guys are debating what to do, and they just start taking pot shots at him. You know, in order to quote unquote put him out of his misery, but also have a little fun on their own, that type of thing. So, you know, when
I think also, you know, it risks like kind of, you know, turning over into like, you know, sadism, like to kind of torture this person who is already dying. And, you know, as much as the last kind of 5 minutes gave us the voiceover, which was a bit of kind of, you know, unvarnished truth about, you know, people die in a basement in the middle of nowhere, yet they're told they were heroes. Turning those people into men is going to keep like taking pot shots at this person who's already dying. It doesn't feel like it. What like it doesn't feel like it serves an end. Obviously, in the book, it's meant to be, you know, a truth that's being told. But in a in this TV show, it would just end up making our guys look like, you know, they were kind of just, you know, had no kind of sense of what was going on or any kind of dignity. It would just be like, you know, a little bit more kind of like sadistic. When you see it on screen, obviously you can read it and you can understand, you know, the interior thoughts of what was going on. Seeing it on screen, I feel, would just make them look like a bunch of people who didn't know when to draw the line and just kind of step away from it.
Yeah.
You know, remember that that is actually a person on the other side of that bank who's dying in pain, and there's no need for you to kind of get involved.
Right. It's true. Definitely makes sense. And at this point, the shot then changes again, and we are back inside, and we see the men dutifully, you know, cleaning their weapons, getting everything ready, you know, for this next patrol that they're going to have to deal with. Jones says, "Who's got a light?" And one of the guys, you know, lights up his lighter for him and lights up a cigarette. And he goes, "Here, sir." We hear someone say 22. And I believe, and I could be wrong, that that's the number of men from the platoon that have been killed, you know, up until this point. I believe that that's the answer for that. And Webster just starts staring at Cobb, who's continuing to drink on the side. And Cobb goes, "What you looking at, Webster?" "Yeah, that's what I thought, college boy." And Jones hears him slurring and goes, "Are you drunk, trooper?" "And leave me alone." He goes, "Answer the question." "Yes, sir, I am drunk, sir. Drunk, sick and tired of fucking patrols, taking orders." And Martin just looks at him and goes, "Hey, cop, shut up. It's boring, okay?" Cop goes, "Oh, you're taking the side, Johnny?" He goes, "Yeah, I actually am." At this point, you know, the conversation basically just stops between them. I mean, then it's an interesting way that they're showing how each of them are dealing with the loss of Jackson at this point. You know, it's quite effective, showing us, you know, that one of the guys is just getting drunk and basically saying, you know, there's no point in any of us being here. You know, we're all just, you know, cannon fodder, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. And I think also as well, you know, this is the thing that stood out to me was, and obviously this is, you know, part of the production, you know, we've already mentioned how good like the firefight was and, you know, stuff like that. The fact that the guy who's getting drunk is just like drinking wine cellar. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sells to me that they are, I don't know why, but like wine cellars always seem like a thing that is like, you know, early, you know, 20th century European. Like, it's always one of those things of like, oh, they're in some kind of chateau somewhere and they have like a fully stocked wine cellar. And so like that detail to me kind of like sold the idea that, you know, this is, you know, the 1940s and they're in Europe. And, you know, maybe also like the wine is a bit stronger than maybe expecting. Like, he's just like drinking straight from the bottle.
Yeah.
He seems very drunk very quickly. So yeah, like that kind of really sold. Like, I think in some films they would have taken this as an opportunity for them to like be drinking hard liquor or something, or, you know, like they something a bit more manly. But this guy just like necking bottle, like wine straight from the bottle, I think is like a really good detail. You know, just like of like, yeah, if somebody wants to try and numb the pain, just want to get drunk quickly, then obviously they're just going to grab the nearest thing. And, you know, they just happen to be right to a very well-stocked wine cellar that he obviously is just going to kind of immediately try and drink his way through. But yeah, and again, you know, something that you would expect from, you know, the title of the show, you know, which is Band of Brothers, you expect a certain closeness and a kind of a togetherness and, you know, a camaraderie. And so to have a bit of tension here between these people of like one guy getting drunk because someone he's, you know, obviously was close to has just been killed. And, you know, like it kind of makes it feel a little bit more real. Like the title of the show can seem like it's going to be a bit more kind of like chummy and friendly, but, you know, these were real men and obviously they had issues and, you know, real pain of, like, you know, they've lost someone and they're struggling to cope
Correct.
with that. And then obviously as viewers in the background, we see the fact that they're sent back out to something that they've just come back from because they were good at their job, because they were successful and they brought back prisoners. They're going to be rewarded by effectively being punished and going back out and doing the same thing
Correct.
again. So we kind of know there is a coming dread of when are they going to be told that they're going back out of control. And in between that, like that kind of the moment between the death and when that's going to happen, when they get that news, you have them trying to cope. And I think the scene kind of really shows that well, of them coping in different ways and kind of how that would to them kind of, you know, getting into arguments and, you know, calling the one guy out and saying college boy and, you know, which I think, you know, I'm not sure if this was true, but obviously, you know, people who were in college could get deferments and they didn't have to go
Correct.
to work.
They
So,
talked about that with Webster, yeah, at Webster.
yes. So there's obviously an issue of like maybe an implication that like this guy probably could have got out of this and didn't need to be here he is. And what are you trying to prove? So there's maybe an undercurrent of that in the scene as well. Yeah, but you know, some good kind of interactions,
Definitely.
like the and some fun kind of, you know, kind of drunk acting as well. I thought, you know, that like obviously it's hard to play like a you know, a drunk, and I thought it was good, like the kind of the anger as well as like the kind of the attempts to kind of cope by getting drunk. I thought it all worked.
Right. It's definitely true. At this point, the shot changes, and you know, once again, we're looking across the river, and we see that Nixon and Winters are standing there, you know, just talking about what's been going on, and Winters says, "No, he knows we lost the man." And he goes, "Yeah, he knows. He also knows you picked up two prisoners who talked about what? OB, supply trouble, Hitler's favorite color. I don't know. None of it gets us across the river. What's the point? Honestly, Sink's been on the phone all day bragging it up. I think he's just showing off now. I don't know, Dick. I don't know what to tell you. You gave him a successful patrol, now he wants two. Successful?" And Spears shows up behind him and goes, "Sir, the men are mustered. If you want me to brief them, I'm gonna. It's the same roster as last night." Well, mostly, you know, making a reference obviously to the fact that Jackson won't be joining them. And then Sink shows up behind them and he goes, "Evening, gents. Evening, Colonel. At ease. Y'all did a damn fine job on a tough mission last night, and I wish you good luck tonight, because I'll be expecting more of the same. Have you briefed the men?" Then Nixon goes, "Just on our way, sir." "All right. Make damn sure you remind them how proud I am of what they did." And then Nixon says to him, "Yes, sir." And that's how this segment will end. But again, it's it's showing the further you are away from knowing the men, the easier it is to make decisions like this. You know, both there are positive and negative aspects of that. You know, the fact that Sink is willing to risk more men in order to get some more prisoners is great. But, you know, Winters is more reluctant to do that because he actually knows the men.
Yeah, and Sink is Dale Dye, like the world's most. I mean, if you were to pick a, you know, an American soldier, I feel like Dale Dye is the man picture because he's, you know, obviously been doing this for a while, hasn't he? Where he's usually like a technical
Yes,
advisor
he's also a
to
technical.
the,
He
like
was a
other
technical
cadets.
advisor on Band of Brothers. I spoke to one of his
Yeah.
top men that was helping train these guys, Freddie Farnsworth, a few months back. Fascinating discussion about all the things that Dale Dye does. Sorry.
Yeah, he's a, yeah, because like obviously, you know, I've seen him in various, obviously he's in Saving Private Ryan, but he's also like, I also, this is going to be a very, you know, a slightly more obscure one. I saw him in Under Siege
Okay,
Dark
of course.
Territory. I remember him from that, and he has like a, you know, a very distinct look to him, and you know, like with the kind of the very kind of trimmed mustache. And was he, am I going crazy, was he not in Starship Troopers as well, which is obviously, you know,
I
a
think
fake
he
war.
was, but I'm not
Yeah,
100% sure.
I don't know that he says anything, but obviously his face is so distinctive that when you see him, you're like, oh yeah, it's that guy. But yeah, like, and I think he obviously understands more than anyone else, like, the kind of the hierarchy and how, people who were giving the orders like are rarely anywhere near the actual kind of, I believe in,
Yeah, so
Vietnam,
he
say
played
this
a
year.
general in Starship Troopers, yeah.
So I think it's yeah, like he's seeing this as a success. He's saying, you managed to get some prisoners. You guys obviously know what they're doing, so let's send them back out again. And the kind of the looks between Damian Lewis and Ron Livingston of like, really, like we've literally just came back in. We lost one of them. We're not like take 5 minutes and just not have to be, sent straight back out like cannon fodder. And I yeah, like the kind of the fact that we see the men who are going to be forced to go back out on patrol, at this moment story we think, and the contrast with like this kind of the general kind of talking to the two the shot. And I think it's interesting because in these last 10 minutes we've had so many layers of like authority like one after the other, where you have Dexter Fletcher is commanding all people. And in charge of him, you have Damian Lewis, and then in charge of him is Dale Dye. Like straight away, we've already gone up the chain of command very quickly within the space of these minutes. But I find it interesting where it's like, yes, obviously these men were successful. They're obviously a good team, and they've managed to achieve this thing. But the fact that it's like, well, they can't rest for 5 minutes. Like we can't send other people out because these are the people what they're doing. So we'll send them back out. And I think the inability to see that is quite interesting of like, like go back in, tell your men we're going back out tonight. like the kind of breaking the bad news to them. This is kind of the moment before that. Like, they're gonna have to break the bad news, kind of know. Obviously we'll in the next few minutes we'll find out what actually happens there. But like I find it interesting that the Dale Dye kind of just saunters in and is like, send them back out and then kind of leave straight away. And like I say, he has such a presence. Like one of the things that always has impressed me about Dale, see him on screen, he just has a presence of like somebody who understands this, like all the years of experience that he has, you just immediately come across just as soon as he walks on screen. And a great cast. Obviously, Tom Hanks knows him from Saving Private Ryan, so I think that probably helped. And like, did he run? Are you saying he ran training some kind of like boot camp or something for
Yeah, I
this?
mean he has an organization
That
that
makes
runs
sense.
boot camps for movies, for actors and stuff like that, and they used it here,
One that I think at some point Ben Stiller may have had to take part in and used as the basis for Tropic Thunder, of like, actors who take themselves too seriously by
it's
going to
definitely a
like boot
possibility.
camps and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, I just like a guy who like immediately you were like, oh yeah, this is the guy in charge, isn't it? Like straight away. I don't know how much he's been like, has he been in previous episodes? He's like how involved has his character been?
Colonel Sink is he's been there numerous times.
And like an actual guy, like because obviously I mean, assuming some of the characters in this are like fictionalized a little bit or they're kind of amalgamations, but like this was like a based on an actual person.
There really was a Colonel Sink.
It's just I guess the thing is for me is like when you hear a character with a name like that, like Colonel Singh, sounds like so very specific, like that has to be real, like otherwise it just it sounds like a kind of it's like so I figured that's got to be like a real person that he's portraying.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, like Dale Dye, wonderful, wonderful. Like, and I think this is the first time I'm seeing Ron Livingston in this. Obviously,
Yes.
yeah, we've already met Damian Lewis, who again, what like a great actor, like always commanding. And Ron Livingston, since Swingers, always been somebody who you like to see, isn't it? Office Space. You're like he's had like such a kind of a varied career. It's interesting seeing him here, kind of in what is like a very kind of straight role. I'm normally used to him being a little bit more comedic. But yeah, no, and it's,
I love him here, so
and like between him and Damian Lewis as well, like they seem to have like a very like on-screen relationship. Like they're they kind of seem to understand each other like instantly. Like there's not a lot of kind of kind of chitter chat. Like they're like, you know, as military men, very much like figuring out what the mission is and what that's going to involve, and you know, obviously interacting with the colonel, you know, all of that,
Right.
you know, very well directed, like very well. Like, you know, it was a fun scene to see like these three. And as I said, Del Dai always just walks on screen and instantly, you know, presence is.
Correct. All right. So today's segment is a game that we're going to be playing World War II movie trivia. So I'm going to once again spin the wheel, and we're going to see what five questions you're going to get. So let's see what you get. Round and round and round the goes. Okay, in the 1981 movie The Bunker,
Okay.
what famous British actor plays Hitler?
I don't know. I've never heard of that film, but it sounds interesting having a British man play Hitler. Would I
Okay, I will give you a hint. This British actor has won two Oscars, 30 years apart.
two Oscars? That's
Yes, and he's still alive today,
a
or as of recording.
Okay. I mean, can I get a clue on like his nationality, maybe? Like, is he
You really think I know enough about that? The truth is,
like Welsh?
I think he actually is Welsh. I do believe he's Welsh.
Okay.
Let me see if I can try and figure that out.
He's not like
Interesting.
Scottish. I mean, I'm not saying that Sean Connery would make a
I
great
do not
Hitler,
believe.
but
No, I don't think he's Scottish. He is. He's from Wales, so he's Welsh. Yes, right.
okay, well, I you know I, like aside from like Richard Burton, like Anthony Hopkins is the only other like Welsh actor of note that I know that would have been working.
Okay. So is that your answer?
I'm gonna have to say that. That's the only answer I can think
And
of.
you would be correct.
Oh,
There you go.
it was Anthony Hopkins.
Yes,
That's
very nice.
crazy. I cannot imagine Anthony Hopkins being Hitler. But now, I
Well,
mean, now I might have to see that film just to see how, because I'm so used to like his, you know, his Welsh lilt. And I don't know how he would translate that into like angry German. Like,
you're gonna have to go seek it out, and I think it's even on YouTube. So
Well,
yeah.
his second Oscar win was that for the father, was it? That other film.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah. I saw that at the cinema, so
Yes. That was an amazing movie. I've seen it I think like 7 or 8 times so far. It's really amazing
I only
because
saw it
it's
once, but I think that was enough for me. Not in a
I
bad
didn't
way,
say it's
but
an
just like
easy I didn't say it's an easy movie to watch, but
no,
it's
like
very profound.
it's very it was it's a bit overwhelming in terms of but there you go. See, now, see, this is the thing, Rob, like giving specific nationalities in the British Isles helps me, you know.
Okay, good. I'm glad I was able to help. I don't think that's going to help you for all of the questions, depending on what they are, but we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
All right. So let's spin the wheel for your second question and hope you do as well. Okay. Are you familiar with the movie The Great Escape?
Not really, no. So this is
Oh, okay.
I mean,
Yes, I don't know.
I know like the kind of the big beats of it, but I'm not sure that I would. I know it, like a lot of information about it.
Okay,
But you know,
so
ask me the question, see if I've got an idea.
okay. How many of the 76 men that escape the prison camp in The Great Escape make it to freedom?
Now, I'm almost like I think I remember this being quite like not low, but like a very specific number. I mean, as all numbers are. So I would say at a guess, probably maybe like, let's say like 20.
Okay, so that is incorrect. There were 76 who just so you know, The Great Escape was the first season of my podcast. So
Okay.
I'm a little familiar with the movie. Just a little bit. So 76 escaped, 50 were executed by the Germans, 22 were returned, and 3 made it to, oh, 20, Now I just figured my math. Okay, 50.
I mean, if it was 76 and minus 50, it would be 26, wouldn't it? So, and then
that's
so
26. So back. 23 were sent back, and three made it to freedom.
So I was close to 20 something. Like, you know.
Okay, but I asked how many made it to freedom. Not that
we're. I know. I knew that like the majority of them didn't actually escape. That's okay. The only thing I can remember. All right,
I'll give you half credit for knowing that the majority of them didn't. There you go. How's that?
Steve McQueen jumped something on the motorcycle. That's good.
Yes, but he was not one of the ones who made it to freedom. He was sent back. So the three that escaped were Danny, Willie, and Sedgwick. Those are the three that escaped. All right, so let's spin the wheel again, and maybe you'll get another question from The Great Escape. Who knows? Or maybe you'll get something from Saving Private Ryan, or something from Bridge on the River Kwai. Nope, you get another question from The Great Escape.
Okay.
Okay. Which of the in the Great Escape, which of the characters who is known as the Tunnel King is actually claustrophobic?
I haven't seen the film, so I don't.
Okay, so the answer is Danny, who's played by Charles Bronson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Charles Bronson, who was in the Death Wish movies, yes. Am I correct?
Correct.
That Charles.
That is correct. That's correct.
Not the Charles Bronson as portrayed by Tom.
No.
That's whether to where he took the name.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so let's spin the wheel once again. Round and around the wheel goes. For your fourth question, and hopefully it won't be another question from The Great Escape for you, because I know how much you love those. Okay, this is a question from Saving Private Ryan.
Okay.
Okay. What actor plays the character of Mike?
Mike? Is there a surname? A surname? They keep calling each other by their surnames, don't they?
Horvath.
Oh.
Sergeant Horvath.
See, now I'm going to have to just picture the men in my head.
Who plays the sergeant? There's a sergeant with them.
Oh, the guy who does all the films, Ed Burns.
No, he's not the sergeant. No.
No? What? So it's not Ed Burns.
And this is a Tom Hanks movie. You're supposed to know this one.
I know. It's been a few years since I watched it. Oh my God. Is it the guy who was... I see his face, but I can't remember his name. He was in... You're gonna have to put me
in. Okay, he has the same first name as your favorite actor.
Tom Sizemore.
Very good.
There we go. I was trying to remember the kind of who was, because obviously Tom Sizemore, and then isn't Ed Burns is like the next highest ranking in that
correct.
In that group. Yeah.
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah. I was sort of halfway right. there. I was just
you're halfway there.
I was trying to remember the rankings. That's all it was.
That's okay. All right, let's spin the wheel one final time and see what question you're going to get this time. And you get another question from Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. Hopefully, my mind has been refreshed on that thing.
Okay, what is Tom Hanks' character's name?
I'm trying to remember what they called him. Because they call him... Is he not called Captain most of the time?
He's called Captain something, yes.
Yeah. And I know he's a school teacher. That's the secret that they're betting on, isn't
it? Oh, you're giving away all the secrets.
Yeah. Because it's not the first time he played... I think it might be the first time he plays a captain in a film. He's played a captain a few more times after that. It's Captain Miller. That's his first name.
Okay, you don't have to... That's the answer. Captain Miller. You don't have
to... Oh, Captain Miller. Oh, I was trying to think what his first name was.
His name is John Miller.
I was going to say, yes, John. That was on the tip of my tongue. That's why I was trying to think of the first name, not the...
Okay. So my bad for not explaining well enough.
No, it's not on you, Rob. That's on me trying to recall, like trying to go through his name to try and recall it. Because obviously they all keep calling him Captain over again. So, yeah, Captain John Miller. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, John, the most common name, isn't it? So it's not like it's
yeah, of course.
Hard to remember. Yeah.
Why not?
So I, you know, I got a couple right there.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one of the films. I think I did okay.
I think you did very well. You did very well there. All right. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and see what you got. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, how are you with submarine movies?
So, I mean, I've seen a couple, so we'll see if this is one of the ones I've seen.
So this is a movie from 1958, starring Clark Gable and Burt Lancaster, about a captain and his XO who argue over what they should be doing, while they're in enemy waters in the Pacific.
Okay. Now the only like, I don't know if this is the actual title of the film, but the only thing that comes to mind, Silent Running. But
you're very close. You are very close. It's not called Silent Running, but both of those words are in the title.
they're both in the title, but
yes.
Ooh. It's not like Run Silent.
Okay, Run Silent is the first part of the title.
I don't know.
It's what else it's called Run Silent, Run Deep.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, now you say the title, of course. Yes. Yeah. Because I think that is there a film called Silent Running? There's something about Silent Running, isn't there?
I think so also.
Is that maybe
isn't
science fiction film or something? I just know
that obviously that is a science fiction film from 1972 with Bruce Dern. You're right.
There we go. Yeah. And obviously that is a term that is used for, you know, submarine. Correct. So there you go. So I sort of had the pieces in my head, just not in the right order.
That's fine. Nicely done.
Yeah. I'd heard of Run Silent, Run Deep, but I obviously, you know, I didn't realize that was about submarines. Right. Although that makes complete sense now.
Doesn't it always?
Yeah. I mean, I've only seen a few films that have submarines in, and, you know, obviously one of them was 571. Where people were outraged because it made it look like the Americans did something in the
war.
Remember, a lot of outrage.
So, exactly.
Not for good reason.
But
well, there you go. I was kind of close. I had part of the word. I'll take that.
I will give you that as a win. Also, there you go. No problem.
Thank you.
Nicely done. Nicely done. All right, so Darren, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yes. I mean, obviously, we've said Tom Hanks' name a few times yesterday, you know, on the previous episode, and obviously today, you know, I do have a podcast called T. Hanks for the Memories, you know, which I would say is the most substantial podcast I've got at the moment. I did do a podcast, you know, not related to films, but more related to Prince, that was called Prince Track by Track, where I covered all of Prince's songs in the, you know, space of 2 years, which doesn't sound like much, but he released like 400 something songs, so that was a lot of episodes very quickly. So if people want to go back and listen to me talk about Prince, we are recently past the kind of 10th anniversary of him not being here.
In 10 years? Oh my god, wow.
10 years, yeah. 2016, the year where everybody died.
Well, you and I are still here.
You know, starting with like David. We are still, yeah, but David Bowie and Alan Rickman like kicked it off, and then everybody else just kept dropping like flies. Like, but yeah, so it's been 10 years since that happened. So if you want to go back and hear my thoughts, that was kind of how I, you know, he was, you know, he's my favorite artist, so that was how I processed his death, was by talking about it on a daily basis for nearly 2 years straight, and then going to Minneapolis and going to his house. So, you know, that's how I grieve. So you can listen to me kind of talk about every single one of the songs. You know, and some people might want to just talk about like the famous stuff, but you know, that he made 39 albums in like 40 years, you know, workaholic. And that's the kind of thing that I admire in someone. And also, a workaholic who put out good stuff, so, you know, kind of like a genius. In a similar way to Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks has, like, had a very steady career where, you know, he basically does, like, a film or two films every and has done, like, almost 40 years straight. And that's always something I admire, somebody who can keep such a high standard of work. Some people might disagree with, you know, Toy Story 4 or whatever, but, like, you know, there's maybe a handful of, like, three or four films of Tom Hanks that I basically hated watching, but everything else has been pretty much great, including Saving Private Ryan, you know, unparalleled masterpiece.
Of course.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So if you want to hear me talk about Prince track by track, you can find it.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, Kurahee!
Kurahee!